This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. How about this weather? It's warm and sunny without being too terribly hot and not a gray cloud in the sky. But that lack of rain isn't great news for our gardens and landscapes. Today, we're going to get advice from our panel of experts about how to help your trees, shrubs, flowers, and vegetables get through these dry conditions. We'll also talk about moving those houseplants back inside after their summer vacation outdoors, and we'll discuss the importance of taking stock of the season to figure out what worked in your garden and what didn't. Joining me now for today's full hour of gardening, our Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator, Kamisha Montgomery. Welcome back, Kamisha.
Hi, great to be here.
Kenton County Extension Office Horticulture Extension Agent, Brandon George. Thanks for being here, Brandon.
Thank you for having me.
And Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach, Scott Berline. Welcome back, Scott.
Thank you.
How's your garden doing? Do you have questions for our experts? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Brandon, you know, we were getting loads of rain earlier this summer, but it's been kind of dry lately. What are the most important signs of trouble to watch for in your landscape when it's warm and dry like this outside?
Yeah, I think for sure you're going to want to look for drooping leaves, yellowing, shriveling, and effectively it's going to work. It's going to affect younger trees and those you recently transplanted more severely, and that includes perennials too. But at least with perennials and stuff, you can cut them back and then just, they won't, lose moisture as much if they have fewer leaves to transpire. So, but with woody plants, especially evergreens, we want to be careful. And if you remember last year, we had the same issue almost the same time. It's very strange. And we forgot, a lot of us, about keeping our evergreens watered into winter. And it really hurt a lot of our broadleaf evergreens with that winter vortex. So make sure you're not forgetting about your evergreen pines and conifers and broadleaf evergreens too.
Kamisha, what about vegetable warning signs? What should we be looking for in our vegetable gardens to make sure things don't get too dry?
Just pay attention to your soil. I think usually you'll want to water pretty deeply in times of drought like we had earlier this summer. But also paying attention to the leaves. If you see any drooping of the leaves, especially with your tomato plants, make sure that you're watering deeply, preferably early in the morning.
Scott, how often should we be watering, whether it comes to landscape or vegetable gardens? How often should we be doing that?
Well, the general rule is about once a week with an inch of water cast over the entire major part of the root zone. So rather than say, like, put a hose on slow dribble next to a tree, you're way better off casting it about, you know, at least within the drip line and even beyond. The old-fashioned kind of sprinklers are usually better for that cast water. And to figure out that inch of depth, I usually I put a cat food can or a tuna can, which is about an inch deep, somewhere in that sprinkler zone, and that'll give you an idea of how long to run it.
Oh, okay. Kamisha, what about with the vegetable garden? How often should people be watering those?
Typically the same. Once a week is preferred. It's not necessarily for you to water more than that, just an inch, but making sure that you're doing some other preventative measures so that you don't have as much erosion or that water is able to seep down into the soil, such as with mulching and stuff like that.
Okay. We do already have some questions that came in via email. The first one is from Carrie. Carrie in Cincinnati writes, I have 4 hackberry trees on my property, and the aphids and lacewings have really done a number on them this year. One tree in particular has leaves that are much droopier than the others. It also has more black and light green lichens growing on it than the rest of the trees. Would it be of any benefit to feed, water, and or apply a pesticide to this tree? Would any treatment only be effective if I did all the trees? Brandon, I'll start with you. What do you think about Carrie's hackberry problem?
Yeah, they are pretty tough trees, native trees, really important for the landscape and the habitat and food they support. But I would say if it's practical, you might be able to treat it. If not, just kind of roll with it and let them kind of see if they can handle it from year to year. But I'm not sure if I would do anything. And it also depends on the age and size of the tree. If that would be known, that would also help a bit more too.
Yeah. What do you think, Scott?
They are tough trees, and they're not. They're often, the word attacked is one I don't like, but they're host to a lot of beneficial insects and some that will harm them. But they're super tough. They're always in locations that are tough. I would look into why these trees are stressed. That's why the lace wings and so forth are there. Try to usher them out of that stress, whatever that would be. Probably water would be the place I would start. It's been so dry lately that doesn't help things. Maybe look at the soil, the root zone, see if a little bit of feeding might work for it. I don't think, a pesticide would be the last thing I would try, just because those trees are already hosting a lot of butterflies and moths and different things. So you don't want to hurt those. And I don't think, one treatment for the lace wings and the aphids would be really beneficial overall. Finding the source of the stress and figuring that out would be where I'd go.
Okay. We have an email question also from Thomas. Thomas's question is about tomatoes. He sent us a picture that I have shown you, Kamisha. His question is, is there a way to keep tomatoes from getting this green area inside? Often my tomatoes have lots more of it than in this picture. The picture shows a tomato sliced open and some kind of chunky green looking parts inside. I know that's a very technical description that I just gave, but Kamisha, what do you think?
Well, from the picture, it seems that it might be due to some stress, and it could be from the weeks of drought that we experienced earlier in the summer, but it also can be a deficiency, a soil deficiency. So one of the things that you can do is take a soil sample and send it off to your local extension office, either OSU or Kenton County can help you with that. It also can be, you can find out which deficiency it is, but it does look like it could be a calcium deficiency. So I would suggest, you can use things like lime. You can also add to your soil some eggshells. You can clean and dry out your eggshells, put them through a coffee grinder, and that will be quicker for your soil to absorb than just crushing up your eggshells and manipulating that throughout the soil. But those are some things that you can do to try to figure out what that problem is. But like I said, it could be drought due to the lack of rain that we experienced, or just get a soil sample to see exactly what it is so you'll know how to treat your soil for that deficiency to have a thriving garden next year.
Okay. I want to remind our listeners, it is a full hour of gardening today, and our experts are here and ready to answer your questions. Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Thomas had another question about a houseplant. He doesn't say what kind of houseplant it is, but he did send a picture and asked, what can I do about the green fungus on this indoor plant? It had killed other plants I have. Scott, I showed you a picture of this. What do you think?
I am not a houseplant person per mm-hmm. se, but I do have them for a while anyway. But when I have problems, and what I've consistently read for other indoor plants is they tend to collect insect predators and so forth over time inside. And actually that photo looked more like a cottony scale to me. They collect those things, and if you can put them outside for a month or so, it tends to clear all that up. If not, then you can start looking into, identifying what your problem is and then treating it exactly. We still have a month of pretty good weather when it doesn't get too cold at night. So I would try putting my plants in a nice protected spot outside and let them get a little exposure to nature and all the controls that nature provides.
What do you think, Brandon? Is nature the healing medicine this plant might need?
No, I agree. The natural predators would definitely be of benefit to taking care of it. And so, yeah, I think, and also, when they're outside in warmer weather, humidity, which most of our houseplants come from tropical climates, they often really invigorate themselves, which can also help, fend off some of those diseases and pests. So I think the benefit of putting them outside cannot be ignored. It's really helpful. I do it all the time.
I would watch the nighttime temperatures, though. Anything like below 55, cover them up or something.
Okay.
Yeah, or bring them in.
Yeah.
Brandon, I'm going to ask you this question. This comes back to watering, because I can't see if you roll your eyes at me with this question, as I can with our guests in the studio. I know, you know, we were talking about watering before. Kamisha mentioned that watering early in the morning is the best time. I've read and we've talked about how that's because if the leaves of plants get wet, they have time to dry out during the day so that you don't get fungus or icky stuff. But when it rains, leaves get wet, and sometimes it rains at night. So what's going on here, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, it can't be completely avoided that foliage gets wet. And also a lot of things need, I mean, they get their leaves cleaned. I think even when they're outside, they can still get sooty mold on them and things if they're growing in understories below trees. And so it's fine if they get wet. We just want to reduce how long it stays on as much as possible. And at night, obviously, it hangs on longer. So, you know, we're just trying to reduce the effects of potential disease inoculation, which happens more in warm night times.
Okay. Well, that's very helpful. I want to remind our listeners, it's a full hour of gardening today. I am shocked that you haven't called yet. It is a good time to get your questions in early and take advantage of all this expertise. Our number is 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We did get an email from Peter. Peter writes, I planted a number of young bur oak and black gum trees in the 6 to 8 foot height range and 1 inch caliper size range around my new construction house about 18 months ago. All were watered regularly and still are as needed. They all looked okay going into last winter and all developed nice buds, and I expected them to really take off this spring. Instead, several of them did not leaf out at all. Those trees have started to develop multiple shoots off the roots. Are those shoots viable for development into quality trees? If so, how should I manage them? I also planted a similar-sized dormant swamp white oak this spring, and it too failed to leaf out, but it did recover somewhat and developed new buds, leaves, and branches. You have thoughts on that, Scott?
Well, yeah, you know, newly planted trees that went in the last winter, which was, you know, normally okay, except for that one period, which was a real whammy.
Yeah.
And then also the stress of, a construction site with the soil probably being compacted and not that great. You know, that's an assumption. It sounds like, you know, it was a little rough. And if you want to manage one of those shoots, I think that's possible and probably a good idea. What I would do is just prune down to one. Make sure the main stem is definitely not alive, and if it isn't, then go down to the one of the better shoots and allow it to become the tree. For the swamp white, just, you know, try to nurse it along, keep it watered, maybe a little fertilizer just to get some nitrogen into it and a little growth, but not anything extreme, and then just keep an eye on it. Maybe prune out the dead, kind of help it along.
Do people need soil tests for trees like this? Is that helpful going into it?
Generally speaking, the soil, even our clay-heavy construction soil, is got enough nutrients, but it's never a bad idea to at least go ahead and get that confirmed and see what your beginning is, what you're dealing with. And that allows you also, if you do have a deficiency, to go ahead and solve that deficiency and not just throw chemicals on the ground and hope that one of them works.
Yeah. We do have a caller on the line. Shauna, thanks so much for calling. What is your question or comment?
Hi, I have a question. I have a clematis that I've had for probably 25 or 30 years, and it's only gotten like a single or a double bloom every year, and that's it. So I'm wondering, I want to transplant it maybe somewhere where there's more sun. I think it doesn't get enough sun. But when is the best time and how to go about that?
Thank you. Let's see what they have to say. Scott, I don't know if you have...
I'm thinking. I've never tried to move a clematis. I think they're pretty easy to transplant. I would think that if once we get those rains that come in November, that's a good time to try, or definitely before, you know, while we're still in the wet period in spring. Those are my go-to times for any kind of moving plants or mm-hmm. planting even. So that's the best I have. Hopefully Brandon has something better.
What do you think, Brandon? You've had the luxury of time to think while Scott's been answering.
Well, I want to say, to me, clematis are really fragile, and their stems are fragile for the most part. But I think they can transplant well. I just know that when I used to see them doing best in the UK and even maybe around here is that they really like their roots cool, mulched well, and kind of maybe planted some perennials in front because they don't like sun on their roots or base. And then they kind of like to have their upper leaves and flowers in full sun to do their best. So you kind of have to strategically plan for that. And I think too, they slow down and look kind of rough when it gets really hot. So I think if they're in the right spot, they can do well, but I think they're a little finicky for us here.
I had one for a long time, which really did poorly, like the one or two flowers a year, until some liriope kind of overcame its root zone and started to provide that shade. So I'm thinking that either that really helped it or just being older, maybe. But
yeah. I hope that helps, Shauna.
Yes, thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. Well, we will continue with our full hour of gardening in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. I can't imagine my life without WVXU. It's always here whenever I need it. And that's why I support it personally. I'm hoping you'll join me by donating at WVXU.org or by calling 513-419-7155. Together, we can sustain this local NPR station. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about gardening for the full hour today with a panel of experts to answer your questions. My guests are Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery, Kenton County Extension Office Horticulture Extension Agent Brandon George, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach Scott Berline. You can join the conversation and get answers to your gardening questions. Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Scott, how should we be dealing with container plants when it's warm and dry outside? What are the tricks to keeping those happy and healthy?
Keep them watered. You know, you just got to keep on it. Keep an eye on it. It gets easy to be more lax this time of year. Maybe you're just tired of them and it's okay to kind of let them go. But if you want to keep them around, you might need to do some refreshing. You can start putting in some of the fall annuals and things. Do that. Keep them watered. If they're out in hot sun and you know, they seem to be struggling, and no matter how much water you're giving them, give them a break with some shade once in a while. The sun can be pretty intense this time of year once the humidity kind of eases out.
Yeah. We have another caller on the line. Hey, Kathy, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi, I have an established white fringe tree, and in the spring it started to leaf out, although some of the leaves were kind of undersized, and really the leafing was kind of sparse. As the season went on and into early summer, the leaves started to fall off. You know, I've kept it watered and everything, and now there's absolutely no leaves on it at all. And there were buds on the tree that looked like they were starting to, you know, form like it was going to leaf out again. But now those buds are brown. Is it dead?
Oh, gosh. Brandon, what do you think?
Oh, I don't know. There might be some disease at play here. Definitely, we could look at it with samples. But I was going to say, I know they have really little drought tolerance. They're often found in wet areas. But yeah, you might have something else going on disease-wise that without kind of pictures, and it would be hard to diagnose.
I would. Is it an American native fringe tree or a Chinese? Do you know?
No, it's an American native.
Okay. Well, the good news is with an American native is you know, they're kind of shrubby, and you know, if you cut it back to the roots even, it'll send new shoots and continue. It is a little odd. I haven't seen drought issues with those much, but that's what this sounds like. Hopefully you've got good healthy buds enough for next year. But if not, you can cut it back and start over again with it.
I'll try that.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Kathy.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Thomas, thanks so much for calling. What is your question?
Hi, thanks for having me. I have a Red Haven peach tree that I planted 2 years ago. It more or less seemed like it died off, much to my daughter's dismay, and we were able to get some sprouts back on it. I removed the ones below the graft, but two of them grew above the graft. They're now longer. I've got two main sprouts. I want to keep it alive, and I want this peach tree to be successful. I'm just trying to figure out what to do with it coming up to this winter to make sure it lives and thrives.
Kamisha, do you have thoughts on this Red Haven peach tree?
I would say you can try to cover it since it is pretty early or a new tree. What do you think, Scott?
Sounds like it might be borers. Brandon might have some answers there. If you got a sprout up above the graft, you're going to have the peach you want. The issue is figuring out why it died along the stem, which sounds like a bore, and then figuring out that. Peach trees are pretty tough. I mean, tough in the sense of hard to grow. there's a lot of things that want to attack them here, including just the weather.
Mm. Okay. Brandon, did you have anything you wanted to add about that?
Without seeing it, I don't want to say anything unless I was sure. So, yeah, it could be borers. It's hard to say, though, without more evidence.
Okay.
Could be borers, you said?
Borers. They're insects that bore into the trunk and eat the cambium and basically starve the top of the tree.
So should I consider at least some sort of wrap or something for the winter?
That's not a bad idea. Maybe some kind of wrap up and including that new sprout.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. Hope that helps. And we have Liz on the line. Thanks for calling, Liz.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have successfully, for the first time, grown some pawpaw plants from seed. And I'm wondering whether I should leave them in the pot over winter or should I get them in the ground now?
What do you think, Kamisha?
I think now would be a good time to get it in the ground. You can leave it in a pot, but I think, if you did want to put it in the ground, I would say this is the perfect time to go ahead and, dig and get that in the ground now.
Okay.
A lot.
Sure. Thanks for calling. We appreciate your listening. Bye-bye. And now we have Bill on the line. Thanks for calling, Bill. What's your question?
Questions on two of them. On gum tree, I got the variety on the liquid ambar amnifolia, which does not produce a prickly balls, but sends up lots of suckers from the surface roots. And I've tried that sucker punch, and it doesn't seem to work. Is there any way to control those? That's the first question.
Not that I'm aware of. And that's a kind of a problem because the more you try to cut them back, the more persistent they seem to get. Hmm. Other than that one product that came out for a few years ago, and I haven't really heard if it's been effective or not. From Bill's experience, it doesn't sound like it was. Maybe Brandon has some idea on that, but I have not come across any real good way of keeping suckers at bay.
Yeah, I don't either. I would just keep them pruned.
Yeah,
well, I just go over them with a lawnmower and keep them down, yeah.
Yeah, that'll show them.
Yep.
Be careful not to damage the bark with that.
Pardon?
Just be careful not to damage the tree.
Oh, no, I don't hit the wood at all or the root of the stem, no.
Yeah. Did you have another question, Bill?
Yes, on coal crops. At this time of year, September, October, every year, I get this little kind of almost looks like corn smut on the thing. It's real grayish, purplish powder with teeny tiny insects. I don't know what they are, and I know seven won't control them, but malathion will. But I don't know what they are and if there's a better way to control them.
Hmm.
Well, you can, there's other natural pest control measures that you can take besides seven. You can spray with either like a fish emulsion or neem oil. Just mixing that with water, like if you're doing like a cold press neem oil, just mixing that with water and sort of spraying that way. Which cold crops are you referring to that you notice that it's on?
It's on broccoli, it's on kale. But not until September. I mean, until then, you get the normal cabbage worms and stuff, but none of this stuff until the fall. But broccoli and kale is mainly where I see it.
Yeah, I would, you know, try to do one of those different natural pest measures, or as far as, like, you know, your pest management controls, instead of, I wouldn't even go as far as using 7. I would try one of those before I even use 7.
Do you know what this bug or pest is?
I don't know exactly what it is without a picture or, you know, just a little bit more description of it. I can't really pinpoint on what it exactly is.
Okay, but it's very fine, almost powdery residue on the plant.
Do you think it'd be helpful to send a sample in to an extension office, Kamisha,
to
get it kind of diagnosed?
But try neem oil.
Yeah, you can try neem oil. Just go ahead and spray on there. But, yeah, you can also send me a picture at the Civic Garden Center or to your extension office. Either OSU or Kenton County can help you with that.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. Hey, Roger. Thanks for calling. What is your question?
I've got a 2-inch Kentucky coffee tree, and about 4 feet up, it's got a branch that goes out, and I just want to maybe knock that branch off so it goes straight up. Rather than, when's the best time to cut that?
What do you think, Brandon?
I would say when it's fully dormant. Late winter, it might bleed less if you do it then, like maybe March. They leaf out pretty late, though, but I would probably do it maybe March. I think, yeah, pruning, I think most deciduous trees, apart from oaks, you have to be careful with, but I think most deciduous trees are best in the late winter.
Yeah. They kind of are squirrely. I mean, they're beautiful trees, but the branches kind of have minds of their own. So good luck with kind of getting it to do what you want it to do.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
Okay. One other question I got just real quick. I see these, a lot of these professional gardeners or what, landscape crew, I guess, they put this mulch really up high against the trunk of the tree, and I never thought that was the way to go.
Report them to the police if they're doing that. It's criminal to do it that way. Maximum 2 inches and not even up onto the bark. It's when a company, if a professional can't get the most basic thing right of how to mulch a tree, then... Well, I don't know. What I would say next is probably going to get me in trouble.
Yeah, that is not fit for the radio. Well, you're right, Roger. That volcano mulch, we talk about it all the time. That is not what's supposed to happen. So
the grim mulcher comes around.
Yeah.
As Joe Box says.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for listening, and thanks for calling, Roger.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We also have another caller. Hey, Thomas, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hey, calling back. Squash stem borer moth. I've dealt with them for the last couple years. I've even resorted to cutting the stems of the squash plants open to remove the grub. If left in there, they kill the entire squash plant. I operated on my pumpkin plants at home, removed 5 of them, and now it's healthy. There's got to be a better way of controlling these things. Are y'all familiar with better techniques?
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry, Brendan. Yeah, those pests are, you know, they'll break your heart once you see your plant, you know, thriving one day, and the next day you start to see it wilting. You think it needs water, and then it starts to continue to wilt. But yeah, looking down towards the bottom of the stem where the soil is, you can see where that squash vine borer will bore into the stem, which then is going to prevent it from, you know, getting water and nutrients from the soil, and that borer will just travel throughout that plant. But, you know, there's a lot of different measures that people try out. You know, you can, I've seen so many weird things, and I've seen some things that, you know, it's just a telltale or through experience you'll see if something works or not. But like you said, if you're cutting it open and you're dissecting it and you find that borer, go ahead and pitch it, or, you know, feed it to your chickens if you have any. But also, one of the things that I've seen was people will inject like your 7 or like a neem oil inside of the stem, and some success has come from that. So you can try to do that.
Doesn't that hurt the fruit?
Not necessarily. It's the borer. You want to catch it early. You know, you can also add into your garden. If it's a small garden, you can also add predators for, you know, those squash vine borers, or even, you know, the moths. So you can add predators like a peri mantis into your garden. You know, you can buy those in bulk these days. So adding some of those predators that are beneficial to your garden is also something that you can explore.
Yeah.
I would just say give the vine plant a lollipop once you've injected it.
You know. Poor plant.
Also, try squashes with solid stems like acorn squash and some others that could also help too.
Okay. Well, thank you, Thomas. We appreciate your call.
Thank you.
We have Tyler on the line. Hey, Tyler.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, how are you?
Good. I recently planted a Japanese maple. It's a blood good. It was about a 24-inch sapling, and I planted it earlier in the summer, and it some of the leaves have turned green. It's on the northwest side of the building, but it has grown a really beautiful offshoot branch. It's about the same height as the rest of the tree, but it started growing almost horizontally, not quite. And I'm wondering if I should let it to continue growing out, or if I should prop that up and attach it to the sapling post that I currently have driven into the ground. Which one would make sense?
What do you think, Brandon?
Perhaps. You know, when it's young, I don't want you to cut away such a large stem because it's obviously going to photosynthesize a lot with all those leaves. But if it's going to affect, as the leader, the appearance and also where it's putting its, you know, energy into, then yeah, maybe. If you're looking for symmetry, I think that could be important to do. But if you kind of like something that's a bit more asymmetrical, which a lot of Japanese maples kind of have, then you can leave it. It's kind of up to you and your goal with its appearance in the future.
Did you want to add anything, Scott?
Do the leaves on the shoot look just like the other leaves do?
So the leaves on the new shoot are actually a lot. They are completely red, whereas the original have all gone green throughout the summer.
Yeah, I was just wondering if maybe you had a reversion or a sport or something different. But other than, you know, which it could be, or it could just be a really vigorous sprout. Other than, you know, then maybe eyeing that for a little while and seeing if you have something different and cool. Brandon's advice is dead on.
Perfect. Well, thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Tyler. Take care. We are going to continue our conversation for in just a moment. We're talking about gardening for the full hour, and you can join us by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're finishing up our full hour of gardening today with a panel of experts to answer your questions. My guests are Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery, Kenton County Extension Office Horticulture Extension Agent Brandon George, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach Scott Berline. We have a lot of callers lined up and just a short amount of time left, so please keep your questions brief. Let's see who's first. Jane, thanks so much for calling. Yeah. What's your question?
Hi. I would just like to hear your guests speak generally about what's advisable for fertilizing young trees in the fall, and whether it's important to get a soil test first, or can you just work on the assumption that they could benefit from a light application of a nitrogen fertilizer.
Okay. What do you think, Brandon?
I would for sure do a soil test. I don't like to really fertilize unless I know something has a deficiency, or it's going to grow so quickly that it's going to use up and exhaust the soil's supply of nutrients. So I would first do that. And then based on your soil results, apply only what you need. Be very careful about doing a general purpose type, which we don't really want to add more phosphate to the soil if we can help it. And that's a big problem around here. But yeah, I would just say do a soil test first. And remember too, a lot of those nutrients you apply now, if the soil's really dry, they're not going to take it up very well. So just keep that in mind, that they're going to need rainfall and things to take that up. But now is a good time to fertilize if they do need it.
Okay. Hope that helps, Jane. We're going to move on to Jim. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. I've got a need of a privacy fence for my, in between my neighbor and I, and my house is higher than his, and I've got an area between the fence and my driveway, not much more than about 10 feet wide. It's going to need to be 15 feet tall, you know, to really kind of block things off. What kind of a plant could I use there?
Gotcha, to get some privacy in there. What do you think, Scott?
I really like some of the new juniper Virginianas, our eastern red cedars, which you see all along the freeways. There's one called Taylor, which is skinny and upright, would probably work. There's a few others out there. They're super tough. Deer don't tend to bother them, so they're really utilitarian for that role.
They grow pretty fast, or do you buy
reasonably
them full
fast,
size?
Yeah.
Okay. Hope that helps, Jim. We have another Jim on the line. Hey, Jim, what's your question about?
Hi, I am concerned about boxwood blight. I've been told that nothing will get rid of it except for cutting out the limbs that are affected.
Okay. We have a tough connection with you, but I know you're worried about the boxwood blight and how to deal with it. Brandon, we have talked about boxwoods so much on this program all summer. There are a whole lot of different things that can be hurting boxwoods, right?
Yes, so many things. Boxwood blight, from what I know, is kind of, once you have it, you kind of have to pull out all the plants. I haven't seen boxwood blight here since I've been here in 2 years, but it might be coming back again. It's been here before. It might be volatella blight. I would just make sure you have a proper diagnosis just to make sure you take it to the diagnostics with OSU or Kentucky, and just to make sure it is boxwood blight, because if it is, you'll have to treat it very differently.
Yeah, so you can contact your local extension agent and figure out how to get a sample to them to make sure you're treating the right thing.
Right.
Thanks for your call, Jim. And we have Jamie on the line. Hey, Jamie, what's your question?
Hey, it's morphed into an answer when I was listening earlier, the answer to the squash vine borer. I had success planting the squash after June the 5th in the past. I think it was 5th or 6th. Anyway.
Okay. So plan a little later. Thank you. What do you think, Kamisha? Does that sound like a good strategy?
That's definitely a good strategy because of the life cycle of the squash vine borers. June the 5th could be a little bit early. You can also wait till early July to plant because of, you know, just knowing the life cycle that the squash vine borer will, after it basically decimates your plant, it will go down into the soil. So another good solution is to succession plant. So if you're having a early harvest of your squash or zucchini plants, you go ahead and put a seed next to it so that you can also have another harvest after that borer season or life cycle has ended.
Okay. We have an email, or Chris called earlier but didn't stay on the line. Chris asked, I have two rows of Sharon. They have some buds on them, but I want them to bloom. I read, give it more water and also fertilize it. What type of fertilizer should she use to get it to bloom? You have thoughts on that, Scott?
Not really. I don't know why they wouldn't be blooming. They're pretty, really tough plants. It could be it's getting too much shade, maybe. But that's my only guess.
Okay. We have an email from Sue with two questions. How often should I water recently transplanted black-eyed Susans? And second question, I have not had success growing milkweed from seed, so I recently planted large milkweed plants. What do you suggest I do to keep it growing? Brandon, do you have thoughts on the transplanted black-eyed Susans and the milkweed?
Black-eyed Susans will be fine, and they only need just keep their root system alive. If I was her, there's a lot of foliage to the plants that have been transplanted. I would cut a lot of that foliage back because at this point it's just transpiring and you just want to keep the root system moist as it's been really dry. Regarding the milkweed, I've heard mixed things with transplanting milkweed. This is the way it grows. I think your best bet is to have, you know, soil not covered in mulch, sow with heavily with seed and hope those come up. But transplant them like you would any other perennial. Be careful, make sure it's well planted and watered, and hopefully it comes up next year.
Okay. We have an email also from Jeffrey. Jeffrey emails, all the houseplants have little gnats. He's tried neem oil. What should he do? They're swarming all around everything and living in the soil. You have thoughts on that, Scott? I know you're not a houseplant guy.
That might be a time for one of those soil drenches, or just actually repotting it. Get all the soil. Those always live in the soil. Mm. So, you know, maybe just take it to the sink, you know, a good stationary tub or outside, rinse all the soil off and repot.
Okay. We have an email from Holly. Holly emails, Norway maple and Norway spruce both have more dead branches than I think they should. They're well-established trees. There are six of the spruce together. Is something happening with disease, or is something particular to my yard? Do you have thoughts on that, Brandon?
Norway spruce, they're not drought tolerant, but they can get rhizosphere needle cast. So could be that. I would have to see it to know for sure, but that can affect it. Norway maple, I don't know. A lot of times, the only Norway maple I see around here is that Crimson King red one, and I don't think they do very well. I think they struggle with just dieback, and I don't know. I don't see them looking great. So I think if that's what she truly has is a Norway maple, it might be that cultivar. And we could, you know, talk more specifically if she emails us any pictures and information about it.
Okay. We have another caller on the line. Fabian, thanks for your call. Could you very briefly give us your comment or question?
Sure. Thank you, guys. What is the importance of native plants? Why should I care about birds and bugs? And then how to plant a low-maintenance prairie garden, if you have time for that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Scott, that sounds like it's up your alley.
Yeah, that's a big question. But natives are they just should be more used in general. I'm not saying everything has to be a native plant. But the more you use them, the more you're hosting a lot of our native insects. You know, they're just, you know, part of the ecological cycle. And I forgot the second question.
Prairie garden.
Prairie gardens are a lot of fun. You know, look into how to establish them, because you need to really kind of get the seed bank out of the soil the best you can. And the best way to do that is kind of keep that area sort of plant free for a few years. But once they're established, you know, and the key to it too is getting the right seed mix. I would take a lot of time and figure out which company out there is the most local, and, you know, the quality of their mix. Put it down and you know, it'll enjoy. I mean, it will take 3 years at least for it to start to really come together, but they're worth it. They attract a lot of wildlife, a lot of insects, different birds, you know, you really, they're just fun. They're beautiful and fun.
Yeah. Hope that helps, Fabian. Thanks so much for your call. We also have an email from Katie. She has a question about her holly tree. Hi, I have a holly tree that we didn't think was going to come back this spring after that really hard cold snap last winter. Thankfully, it has, but is there anything I can do or need to do to prepare it for next winter? What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah, again, with evergreens, conifers, broadleaf evergreens, you really want to make sure they stay well watered before it gets cold, especially if it's been dry, because they get even more stressed as they continue to transpire all winter. You could try you could spray something like Wiltproof on them, which would help them transpire less and protect them from cold, drying winds. So that's something you could try. You could even cover them with burlap if you know you're going to have a really tough cold spell for maybe a few days. So anything to kind of protect their leaves throughout the winter can be helpful, especially if they're recovering from previous damage.
Okay, we have a question from Sarah. Sarah asks, I would like to grow Baptista from the seeds of my existing plant. Is there a way to use the seeds from the existing plant and grow more Baptista?
Yeah, I'm assuming it's Baptisia.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, which is a legume. The seeds are very hard, and what I found that I had much better germination rates if I just nicked that seed coat a little bit I did it with a razor, which is probably the dumbest, most dangerous way. There's other ways to do it. But just get a little bit of that hard coat nicked and open available. Soak it for a couple of days and then sew it. You can sew it inside over winter. I would do it starting maybe February. Or you can just put them outside when you're ready to go. It's a lot of fun to grow those plants. You may or may not get, you could get any color at this point. You know, if you just have the native and no other cultivars around, you'll get blue. But with all the cultivars now, there's a lot of mixing and matching and new things coming around when you get a seedling.
Okay. We are running out of time. I did want to talk, I was hoping to talk with all of you, but we probably won't have time for that, about your kind of garden failures and what you learned from the season. Kamisha, did you have any kind of gardening failures that you thought, ooh, I learned something special this year from that?
Failures, let's see.
You're probably perfect.
Not perfect, but, you know, everything is, you learn something new every year. I would say just being as attentive to my garden, of course, you know, everyone can improve on that. Watering, getting that down packed, it's, you know, given that we had so much drought early summer, you know, but I think building on my compost is another thing that I can improve on. And ready for next year, we've started different ways as far as composting with, instead of like a three bin, we've incorporated a lot of bioreactors, so that I think that's something that is going to be beneficial to our garden next year.
Okay. Real quick, Scott, do you have any failures you want to confess to the people in the next 30 seconds?
Sure. I like to grow a lot of things from seed and inside in the wintertime and so forth. And I brought some flats out and put them in on my garden bed on loose soil, and thinking I would get to them, and I never did. So they stayed there and rooted through and down into the soil, and I think that's where they're going to stay. they're rooted in really well. So yeah.
So you might procrastinate. The plants have other ideas.
Right.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery, Kenton County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Brandon George, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Manager of Botanical Garden Outreach Scott Bauerlein. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Ella Rowan. If you miss our program live, you can subscribe to Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.